This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. We are live from the Upstage Cabaret at Triad Stage in Greensboro. Thomas Wolfe, O. Henry, David Sedaris, those are just some of the names that come up when you think of North Carolina authors. The organizers for Greensboro Bound, a literary festival, want you to know that North Carolina's literary legacy includes those names, but is at the same time far more expansive. It's one that includes transgender poet Cameron Awkward Rich and celebrates the work of undocumented writers. Joining us to talk about the city's first book fair is Brian Lampkin. He's co-owner of Scuppernong Books and president of the board of Greensboro Bound. It's a literary festival taking place this weekend throughout downtown Greensboro. Brian, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank.
Why does Greensboro need a festival of the book?
Yeah, it's a fair question, and I think the best answer was almost answered at our previous segment, right? That, you know, education and books are such an important part of North Carolina's history, and Greensboro just felt like that is us. That is this amazing literary history of our city needed an expansive festival for the first time. It needed to bring 80 writers to town to show, like, what have we been doing all these years? Why haven't we done this before?
And you're showcasing a lot of diversity that is not necessarily in the history of North Carolina, although there is some, but much, much more that's on show and on display at your festival.
Yeah, yeah. And even diversity is sometimes a funny word. We just wanted to represent our community, right? Yeah. We didn't want to be, you know, people deciding what was diverse and what wasn't. We wanted to look at our community and bring the people to town who represented the people who live here.
Right? And where are you going to do this? All over downtown, right?
All over downtown, yeah. So including this very space, the Triad Stage will host some events, the International Civil Rights Museum. The main part of the festival will be at the Greensboro Cultural Center, right downtown, and Scuppernong Books, and on.
So what all is going to happen, and who are you bringing in? Give us a short list.
I'll give you the short list. We have three keynotes on Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night. Friday night, our keynote speaker is Daniel Pink. And on Saturday night, our keynote is the novelist Kevin Powers. And on Sunday, Nikki Giovanni will be here.
Wow.
At 6 o'clock. But don't get your hopes up, Frank. It's already sold out.
Now we say sold out. It's a free festival.
Yeah.
But you need tickets for
And people have been telling me over and over, I have to say free at least 10 times on this show today. That's two.
I'm reminding you.
Yeah. So it is free, but we did have to ticket Nikki's event because we knew they would go fast. And 900-seat Harrison Auditorium at the North Carolina A&T campus is indeed filled up.
Yeah. Cool story about how you got her to come.
Yeah, so Steve Mitchell, one of the co-owners at Scuppernong, was in Charlotte for an event, a politics and prose event in Charlotte, and Nikki was the keynote speaker there. And he said, well, if she's here, why can't she be in Greensboro? And you just have to ask, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just ask at the right time, and Nikki, in all amazing generosity, said, sure. Book festival? Yeah, I'm in.
So. And there are going to be workshops as well?
Plenty of workshops. You know, all those are filled up already, too. So if you're working on your novel, Frank, you're going to have to wait a little bit longer.
Yeah. Well, it's been 65 years in the making, so I guess another month won't.
Yeah.
So it's everything's sold out that you need tickets for, right?
Yeah. But
so what can I do if I come here? You've been too successful.
There's 50 other events.
Oh, okay.
So, and all of them are sort of first come, first serve, but most of them are housed in, like, for instance, the Van Dyke Performance Space is a 320-seat auditorium. There's some amazing things going on in that space, and you might want to get there a little bit early. Mm-hmm. But, you know, first come, first serve, and that's the way festivals work, though. If the one thing you want to go to is, you know, is too full, you go to something else that is equally as exciting.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you got your finger on it. In fact, Greensboro did want this, and so here you are.
Yeah, and you know, while Scuppernong Books has been sort of an organizing space for this, it really has been a community effort. You know, we have the steering committee of 40-plus people who've met over a year and a half, and all these organizations and individuals have given money. Turns out money is a very important piece of putting on a literary festival. We try to ignore that. We think it's just about the writers.
But I thought it was all about the word.
It is. But you want to pay the writers.
The word is
too,
money.
Right?
Yeah. Well, no, of course you do. And, and you want to show your proper respect in every way. We are live now from the Triad Stage in Greensboro. And I'm talking to Brian Lampkin, who's co-owner of Scuppernong Books, president of the board of Greensboro Bound. One of the authors who will appear at Greensboro Bound is Naima Koster. She's a fiction writer and essayist. And her work has been published in the New York Times, several other outlets. Her debut novel is now out, Halsey Street, and Naima is with us now. Welcome to The State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about your novel. It's actually, you are living in Durham now.
Yes.
But you didn't live here all your life.
No, I moved here about 3 years ago from Brooklyn, New York.
And that's where your book is mostly set, right?
Yes.
That's about Halsey Street.
Yes. So Halsey Street is set in Brooklyn, and it's about gentrification in a Brooklyn neighborhood and how that makes people feel displaced and uncertain of how to relate to the place that they live in and also to relate to their neighbors. And so I follow two women who are trying to find their place in Brooklyn. And I started the book when I lived in New York City, and I finished and sold it here in North Carolina, which is a place that I saw was also undergoing a lot of rapid change in its cities.
Yeah, you moved to Durham, and there it is again, right? Right in front. So tell us more about the book and about the characters in this book and how they relate to each other.
So the book begins with a character named Penelope who returns to Brooklyn to take care of her father, who's not doing so well after the closing of his record store, Grand Records. So he sort of lost his place and his connection in the community, and she moves back to take care of him. But she doesn't want to live in the house that she grew up in because she had a difficult relationship with her mother, who's gone and who's left the country. So instead, she rents a room from a new family that's moved into the neighborhood. So it's an affluent white family. She's a woman of color, and so it's about her living in this attic and forming a relationship with the new family, but then also trying to figure out where she fits into the change situation in her home.
Can I ask you to read for us?
Yes, I'd love to. So I'm going to read Penelope on a Run in the Neighborhood. It's a good thing to make your character a runner because then you get to survey the neighborhood and all of its sights. So this is Penelope on a Run. The rain started to pick up, and Penelope ran past a gourmet pizzeria, a one-room bookstore, and a wine bar where the Puerto Rican deli used to be. She stopped to stretch on the corner, right across from the health food store. She'd never seen it before, but of course she knew how to find it. The shop glowed behind a hedge of skinny ginkgo trees, the awning was a deep brown, and above the entrance was the shop name Sprout in block letters, the tea curling into the leaves of a green shoot. It was like any small upscale supermarket, the produce arranged in crates under soft spotlights at the front of the shop. Customers stood in lines before the dry food dispensers, which looked like gumball machines filled with grains and nuts. The shop was so bright that even from across the street, Penelope could see the colors of the customers' painted nails, the glint of their eyeglasses. The crack still parted the sidewalk in front of the store. No one had bothered to fill it in. They'd painted over the exterior so that it was lime green now. Penelope wondered if the new owners had seen her initials there, PSG, Penelope Sophia Grand, carved into the brick, beside the RAG for Ralph Arnold Grand, her father, and the M that was all Mireya left behind. Had the green paint been enough to cover them?
Naima Koster, author of Halsey Street and part of Greensboro Bound Literary Festival happening this weekend in Greensboro. Halsey Street is a real street in Brooklyn.
Yes, right? It is.
In the Bedford-Stuyvesant neighborhood.
Correct.
This is this neighborhood. Now, Bedford-Stuyvesant had been one of those places where it was the name of poverty and one of the poorest neighborhoods in America. It was a symbol of that. It's obviously undergoing this transformation and difficult for your characters. How do you treat that as a writer? Because in many ways, you know, how are you nostalgic for a place that had stories that on the outside weren't stories that you wanted to be part of.
Mm-hmm. So Bedford-Stuyvesant or Bed-Stuy definitely had a history and a reputation for being a place for poor people, but it was also a place that was the center of a lot of rich black cultural life. And so one of the things that we see with gentrification is that places that were previously devalued, say considered a place where there's nothing important culturally or artistically happening, suddenly becoming hubs of creativity, as if artists and creative people and creativity weren't happening in Bed-Stuy before this influx of newcomers. So part of what I wanted to do was show the ways that there were already interesting and rich things happening at the level of businesses and in communities and in people's homes before sort of the rank and status of Bed-Stuy seemed to go through the roof.
Yeah, and I think that's a fascinating project that you're on, because what it puts its finger on is the way in which progressive thinking, artistically minded people contribute to much of what we don't like about America. That begins with preconceived notions. It begins with prejudice about who can create and what is a creation and what is a progressive thing. Is it Sprouts with nuts in the bins, or are there other ways in which we can express creativity and cultural life.
Yes, and I think a lot about how gentrification renders material losses for people. So eviction, homelessness, the targeting sometimes by police of longtime residents. But I think also about what is lost imaginatively and how we think about a place too, right? It's pervasive in the way we talk about places. There was nothing there before. There's nothing going on that really render invisible all of the life and activity that exists in a place.
And that doesn't mean that everything is happy and cheery. I mean, your characters are suffering, and that's part of our, we follow their suffering through the course of the novel.
Yes, and so I wanted to create a portrait of a people in a place that could affirm their value, but didn't require that they become paradigms of virtue for us. Mm-hmm. So are still real people who make mistakes and frustrate each other and likely frustrate the reader, sometimes frustrated the author, but but still have lives that are worthy of our interest and our attention.
Can I ask you to read for us again?
Yes, happily. So I'm going to read now a conversation between Penelope and her father, Ralph. And Ralph was talking to Penelope about the changes in the neighborhood. "What we ought to do is put the house in your name," he said. "You're going to be fine, Pop. You've just got to do those exercises the doctor gave you. These people are cold, Penelope. That's what I'm trying to tell you. They think a neighborhood is only what you can buy. Fancy coffee, flowers on the table, a big old house. It's all just stuff to them, stuff they want, stuff they think they deserve because they can afford it. A neighborhood means more than that. It's about the people." Penelope said she wanted to focus on Ralph getting better and not worse. "But it's better to have it all written down," he said. "What if I fall again and they find a way to steal the house right out from under us? I already had a man come by once. I caught him poking around in the front. He said he wanted to take over my mortgage from me, and I told him to get off my property." "You never told me that." "I never told you a lot of things. Me and your mother, we never had no place. We don't want that for you." Penelope knew very well that she would never move back into the house on Halsey Street. To live there would be to go backward into a life she hadn't chosen. She'd just as soon go back to having Mireya as her mother, but she didn't want to trouble her father anymore. "I'll think about it, Pop," she said.
Naima Koster reading from her debut novel, Halsey Street. She's one of the many authors appearing at Greensboro Bound, a literary festival this weekend in Greensboro. You talked about, I think you said you wrote it all. You were in New York when you wrote it. Then you've since moved to Durham. Does this book feel different to you? Is there anything that opened up in your own book now that you've been displaced yourself?
Yes, it's interesting to be in the position of a newcomer now. So in Brooklyn, I was a longtime resident. I could scowl and have ambivalence about newcomers. And then I've come to North Carolina, a place that I've tried to become a part of and integrate into the community. And it's interesting how a move can make one so self-centered. So in moving to North Carolina, I thought chiefly about what I needed and what I wanted for a long time before really ever thinking about how to meaningfully plug into the community and connect to my neighbors. So it was interesting to find myself in the position of some of the characters in Halsey Street, but as the person who's new.
Well, now apparently you got woke to
yes.
That possibility and that phenomenon. What'd you do about that?
Well, I think getting woke is an ongoing process.
Okay.
So it's an interesting term because I think it requires work.
Yeah, yeah.
And so something that I think is really vital for me in thinking about what the history of a community and a place is sort of to look beyond the obvious sources. So I think about this a lot with books, right? Who are the North Carolina writers? If you enter that question into Google, you likely won't get me, but you certainly won't get a lot of the writers who are going to be at Greensboro Bound. So also thinking about ways of learning from some of the unexpected places and resources that we have, or some of the less considered resources that we have.
But their careers will explode after Greensboro Bound.
They certainly will.
Which is this weekend. Naima Koster is a fiction writer and essayist whose work has been published in the New York Times and elsewhere. Her debut novel is called Halsey Street. Her panel discussions will start Sunday afternoon at Greensboro Central Library in the Nussbaum Room, and perhaps sold out? No.
No,
you
no,
can
no.
Go.
But it is free. It is.
And it's free.
It's free.
As we have been told to say more often than not. But it should. You should know that it's free. Of course, it's a good thing. It's about books. Brian Lampkin, co-owner of Scuppernong Books, president of the board of Greensboro Bound, a literary festival free to all of you here in the city of Greensboro. Yeah. Thank you so much for
Thank
being
you,
on the program.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Greensboro Bound, a literary festival, this weekend, and most of them in downtown Greensboro. Take a look at our website, stateofthings.org. The State of Things is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley is our technical director with help from Al Wadarski today. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacia. Once again, we've got some music from Farewell Friend, Tom Troyer on vocals, Mark Byerly on the acoustic guitar, Evan Campfield on the bass. They're going to be at Sunset Theater in Asheboro, June 11th, for the release of their new CD called Lineage. Once again, Farewell Friend.
Thank you, Frank. The song is called Grandfather Clock, and it's a song I wrote when I was a teacher, so I'll send this out to the teachers for tomorrow. Last of a dying race, I'm a tree in a field, a place where you can land and rest your opinions and listen to the wind and hear the whisper. Ready? Go. Are you an inchworm?